We are glad that you chose to be here. You know, I don't know about you, but I know that for a lot of us, and sometimes I get this way, even as a pastor, there are those times that I hear a message and I think to myself as I've heard it, man, that makes a lot of sense. But then when I get through my normal weekly routine, I get into a Monday morning and I get into my normal Monday routine, there's this thing that just kind of leaves it behind, and I separate what I've heard and the distinctiveness of what I've heard with the life that I'm living as a part of it. And today what we're going to do is I want to share with you a passage of scripture. And if you've got a Bible, go ahead and open it up to John, the fourth chapter. And we're going to hang out in this entire chapter today, because in this story, what we have been learning over the last couple of weeks is we've taken a couple of different stories. And one particular week, we took the story of understanding a blind man, and he was healed by Jesus. And even the closest friends to him still did not believe he was healed. Even as he was going, look, I'm healed, this is me. And they're like, are you sure it's you? Are you sure you don't have a brother? And so we talked about that last week. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about a guy who was very small in stature, and he basically walked in to see Jesus, and it was a conversation where Jesus was 100% grace and 100% truth, and understanding how that operation works inside of him. And today, we're going to talk about a story that many of you may be familiar with, but in the course of this story, it just so happens to work in the day-to-day life of where Jesus is going. So let's go ahead and pick it up in John chapter 4, the first few verses. Here's what he has to say in the New Living Translation. Jesus knew the Pharisees had heard that he was baptizing and making more disciples than John. A little footnote here, Jesus didn't himself do the baptism, his disciples did. So he left Judea and returned to Galilee. So you got to understand where this is coming from. Jesus has been in a location and he's basically going back home. So you have a commute of how you get home every day. You have a way in which you do it. Some of us in the room are doing it in such a way that you've been doing it for 20 or 25 years. And there may be different routes for you to go home, but you do not vary from your route. If you're one of those people, show of hands, who uses the exact same route day after day, please raise your hand right now. Okay, we got some of you in the room. Now, how many of you mix it up? Anybody here in the room mix it up? Some of you like to mix it up? Okay, well, here we are. Jesus is on his way home, and here's what happens. It says this, he had to go through Samaria on the way. Let me tell you why this is significant. Because for Jews, if they're going from Judea to Galilee, they don't go through Samaria. And the reality for them is this, that while it's the direct route, they didn't like Samaritans. And so the Jews always picked either going in towards the coast, and they would walk along the coast around Samaria, or they would go in towards the land and they would walk around Samaria, but the Jews didn't go through Samaria. And in this verse, John gives us a description. One of the best friends of Jesus gives us an inside description, and he shows us that here, Jesus knew that there was a divine appointment. He knew that there was a moment that was about to happen. He knew that there was going to be something that took place, and this is why Jesus had to go through Samaria on the way. And so here he is. He comes to this Samaritan village of Sychar near the field that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. And then it continues on and says, Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired from the long journey, sat wearily beside the well about noontime. And so the first thing, if you're filling in blanks, that I want you to know is this, is that Jesus shows me that God moments can happen when we're just doing life. You know, most of us have this idea of going through our daily routine. You wake up, you may brush your teeth, you may take a shower, you may get ready, you may go to work, and then you come back home and you may make a dinner somewhere along the way, and you have a daily routine that you go through. And a lot of us in the course of our daily routine even come to a place where we do not look for Jesus to show up in that routine. And here's Jesus. He recognizes that even going from point A to point B, Even going on his way home, God's going to show up and there's going to be a God moment. And for many of us, while we think that God moments happen on a Sunday morning at church, or God moments happen at a retreat, or God moments happen at a camp, or God moments happen at places where we've prepared ourselves and we've made those happen, what we discover with Jesus in a better story is that God moments can happen just on the course of your day. God moments can happen as you're going from point A to point B. God moments can happen even as you are heading home. And we find this with Jesus in John chapter 4. And so the story continues on, and here's what happens. Soon a Samaritan woman came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." He was alone at the time. His disciples had gone in the village to get some food. And then he says, the woman was surprised, for Jews refused to have anything to do with Samaritans. So she said to Jesus, "You're a Jew. I'm a Samaritan woman. Why are you asking me for a drink?" And here's where the story starts to get interesting. Because what I love about Jesus in a better story is because of the fact that Jesus helps us to understand. He sees inside of us that when you and I go through life and we allow Jesus to be a part of it, Jesus shows us simply this, that we can love our enemies. That it doesn't matter, but if you're going to have a better story, there are people in your world that are your enemies. There are people that you've chosen not to be a part of. There are people that you walk on the other side of the street. There are people that you don't want to talk to. There are people that you ignore. And yet this person would fit every one of those categories. And Jesus chooses to show us how do we love our enemies. Now let me pause here for a moment because I want you to understand why this person was an enemy to Jesus. And it's three reasons why many of you have enemies, or many, even myself at times, create people to be enemies for us. There are three categories, major categories, that people define to make enemies in their life. And the first category is simply this: race. Notice she was a Samaritan. Many of us, and you could even put slash religion on this, but many of us choose to make people who are enemies who are of a different race. Now you may say, "Well, Pastor, I'm a little bit beyond that. I actually have a person who's a black friend," maybe something is what you'd want to say. And the reality is this, is that you live life in a world, in a bubble, to where you recognize that you have a group of people that you hang out with that look like you, that act like you, that smell like you. And you, when you see somebody who doesn't look that way, you don't necessarily go out of your way to try to have a conversation. And here's Jesus in this moment talking to somebody from a race that the Jewish people hated. They didn't like these individuals. They didn't want to be around these individuals. And yet Jesus was willing to go out of his way to do whatever it took for him to honor and to talk to this person. And you and I have a tendency at times to get stuck in our routines and in our lives. And if somebody believes a different way than us, if somebody looks a different way than us, we have a tendency to miss this. You know, this weekend we are celebrating Martin Luther King weekend. And also we celebrate being pro-life, that we're behind the idea and the understanding that life begins at conception. And the problem for many of us is that we choose one or the other and not both. Jesus was pro-life, period. And he believed that if you look different than him, if you acted different than him, even if you chose a different religion than him, he was willing to be with you. He was willing to have a conversation with you. He was willing to honor and respect you and even go out of his way. Now you have to understand why the Jews didn't like the Samaritans. It goes way back to the time right after David was king. When David was king in the Old Testament, he united the two kingdoms by that time that had grown to prominence. There was a kingdom of Israel and there was a kingdom of Judah. And David had come along the scene and he united these folks. And then what happened was he handed off the kingdom to his son Solomon. And as Solomon continued on later in Solomon's life, there was a division that occurred back into these two kingdoms. There was the kingdom of Israel and there was the kingdom of Judah. And what happened was the kingdom of Judah decided that they they would set up shop and that the city of David would become the city where God spoke. And this was the centerpiece of their universe. And this is why Jerusalem became the capital of the kingdom of Judah. But in Israel, when they decided to split up, they created their own capital and they decided to have a separate capital. And the Israelites would say, this is the place where God's going to speak to us. He's not speaking to us in Jerusalem. He's speaking to us here. And so while family roots went very deep, the truth was half of the kingdom became Israel, half of the kingdom became Judah, and this is where the anger and the hatred began. And then it continued on. In 766 BC, the Assyrians came in, invaded Israel, and wiped Israel off the map. They took over Israel's capital city, and in taking over Israel's capital city, they took the smartest and the best Israelites, shipped them off to the capital of Assyria, and in the course of that, took people from all of these different places from around the known world at that time, and they incorporated them into what was known as Israel. They brought them in, and because the Assyrians brought these folks in, the marriages began to happen, and the Assyrians brought in all of these different gods from all of these different kingdoms, and what happened was the Samaritans began to grow up. They were half Jewish, they were half something else, and the Israelites hated them, and the reason the Israelites hated them is because eventually the Samaritans would claim the first five books of the Old Testament and no other books of the Bible, and they came together to create their own religious ceremonies that had lots of different religions come together and the first five books of the Old Testament, and that's what they called religion. And this is why a Jewish person wanted nothing to do with a Samaritan, because they looked different. They even worshiped a god that somewhat looked like theirs but wasn't their God. And yet Jesus pauses and begins a conversation with a Samaritan. Let me ask you, how about you? How about your world? Do you go out of your way when you see someone who looks different than you, someone who worships different than you? Are you a person that loves to step out of your norm and your comfort zone and begin to know who they are and know some things about them? A second category that we find that this lady was in was the fact that she was a female. And the truth is that in this society, if you were a single male, you didn't go talk to females. If you were a female, you didn't talk to men. And so there was this peace that took place because women were considered less in the course of this society. And the fact that Jesus would be willing to ask this lady for some water, the fact that he'd be willing to address her, this is why she says, I am a Samaritan woman. There are two reasons why you shouldn't be talking to me. Number one, it's my race and what I believe. And number two, I'm a woman. Why are you talking to me? And what I love about Jesus is he shows us that regardless of your gender, whether you are a male, a female, or gender confused, the reality is he's willing to treat you with love and respect. And while many in this room may claim to say that these people are my enemies, or they may not even say it, but you know you say it in the way that you act. Maybe you've been a person who's been guilty of telling jokes about, all women are like this or all men are like this. And while you may talk about it from the perspective of office humor, you know that the respect level you have of the opposite sex is very different than the respect level that Jesus had of this woman. There's a third category that this fits. And another reason why you and I create enemies has to do with sin patterns. You see someone who has a pattern of sin that's different than your moral standard, and because of it, you automatically choose to not associate with those folks. You say, you know what, I'm not going to hang out with them. I don't want to be with them. I don't want to talk to them, because the point is that they have this lifestyle and they're choosing it, and so they get what they deserve because they're choosing this lifestyle. And here's Jesus talking to this individual, having a conversation with her, and he's saying, you know what, I don't care what your race is. I don't care what religion you're a part of. I don't care that you're a female when I'm a male, and I certainly know what your sin patterns are, and I don't care about those. Listen to what he says in John chapter chapter 4, verses 16 through 19. He says to her in the course of a conversation, "Go get your husband," Jesus says to her. And she says, "I don't have a husband," she replies. And Jesus says, "You're right, you don't have a husband. You've had five husbands. You're not even married to the man you're living with now. You certainly spoke the truth." And then she says, "Sir," the woman said, "you must be a prophet." Notice this, that this is a lady who many in her world would have associated with the fact that she was an outcast, that she was a sinner, that even in her own world, she didn't have people that wanted to be with her because of her sin. We find out that Jesus approached this about noon. Generally, the Jewish day would start at 6 a.m., and it says at the sixth hour is when she approached, which would be about noon. And what happens in the course of this conversation is that we know, according to history, that most ladies would get up early in the morning, they would collect the water for the day, but not only would they collect the water of the day, this would be their opportunity for them to be able to socialize with the other ladies in the village. And they would wake up early in the morning, they would go and get their water, and they would find out the morning gossip of who was doing what and what was happening where and all these kind of things. But this lady right here, no, not her. What she does is she decides to show up when nobody else is there. You know why she shows up when nobody else is there? Because she's probably the centerpiece of the gospel. She's the centerpiece of all the gossip that took place. She probably got tired of people saying, "Man, keep your husbands away from her," because she's always looking for another man. You don't want to be around her. And what I love about Jesus is that Jesus decides to look at her not from her race. He decides to look at her not from her religion. He decides to look at her not from the fact that she was the opposite gender or her sin patterns. Here's what Jesus does in the course of these few verses that we find out. And the encouragement for you, if you've got enemies, people that you may say, "Well, I don't really call them an enemy," but you act differently around them or you avoid them. Here's what Jesus did. He treated her with respect. He was willing to have a conversation with her. He was willing to talk to her. He spoke with her. He treated her as if she was equal. He did something that most Jewish men would have never done in the course of that moment. He dropped social norms. Why? Because he knew that while other people may say, "Hey, you don't talk to these people." Why? Because he was a rabbi. He was a religious leader of his day. And yet he was willing to drop the social norms of speaking to a woman, the social norms of speaking to a person of a different race, of speaking to a person who was filled with enormous sin patterns. And yet he was willing to drop the social norms to talk with her. He even invited her into deeper conversation. So here's the challenge. How many of us are willing to do this? How many of us go about our normal routine, and part of the normal daily routine for you is that you see the exact same people looking the exact same way, doing the exact same things, and the last thing you want is to interrupt your routine with somebody who does not fit the category that you would call them a normal person? How do you figure this thing out? The next thing we find is that Jesus shows me that people far from God don't seek God. Now, this is an interesting piece because a lot of people say, well, if people are far from God, they're seeking God. But here's what I want us to clarify. True seeking of God doesn't begin until someone says yes to Jesus. Because when someone says yes to Jesus, then they are ready to follow after him. They are ready to seek God. They're ready to find out who God is and how God can be a part of their lives. What I've discovered over the years is that many people who are far from God love the things that God brings, they don't necessarily want God. Your heart's broken because somebody broke up with you and you're going, "Man, my heart's so broken. You know what I want is I would love for God to fill this hole in my heart. Not that I want him in, I just like the things that he can do." Are you sad because somebody you love died and so you're filled with grief? "God, take away my grief. I know that you can give comfort in grief. So God, I'm more interested in that comfort than I am in you." God, you know, I'm really struggling at night sleeping because I have all this anxiety inside of me and worry, and I don't know what to do with this. And so every night I just sit around and I'm like, what am I going to do? And you're more interested in the fact that God can provide you peace than the very peace that God gives whenever you say yes to him. You see, the understanding of this, Paul would bring out in Romans, the third chapter, Paul would say these things about this understanding. He would say, no one is truly wise. No one is seeking God. And in this whole piece that Paul's describing, and he's quoting Old Testament scriptures, Paul is trying to bring forth this idea and this understanding that oftentimes what happens is that people who are far from God are seeking that which God gives while at the same time running from him. This concept, this idea is that you say, you know what, God, I really screwed up and I made this major mistake in my life. And so I would love to have forgiveness and mercy, but I don't plan on changing my ways. I still plan on making this mistake again and again and again. And so, God, I want your forgiveness. God, I want your love. God, I want your mercy. But the last thing I want is you. I want the things that you bring, not necessarily you. And Paul tries to bring this point home in Romans chapter 3 when he's describing Jewish Christians and Jews and how they get the foundational pieces of Scripture, and even brings this idea to Christians and how we're grafted in and the understanding of this. And the argument in Romans chapter 3 that Paul's making is that so many of us want the things God gives. We just don't want God. And listen to how this lady describes this as she continues on. Jesus says, if you only knew the gift God has for you and who's speaking to you, then you would ask, and I would give you living water. But sir, she says, you don't have a rope, you don't have a bucket, and this well is very deep. Where would you get this living water? And besides, do you think that you're greater than our ancestor Jacob who gave us this well? How can you offer better water than he and his sons and his animals enjoyed? And then Jesus says, anyone who drinks this water will soon become thirsty again, but those who drink the water I give will never be thirsty again. It becomes a fresh, bubbling spring within them, giving them eternal life. Now, I say this because, again, another one of the social norms is that the last thing that a religious leader would ever ask of a Samaritan is to be able to share the same bucket or cup. This was part of the whole code of what it meant to be separate because of the idea. And here's Jesus saying to her, I've got something that you would love to be a part of. I've got something that's here. And this lady's saying, you mean to tell me that you've got better water than this? You know, the amazing thing is today, if you go and you get to visit the Holy Land, they'll take you to a place where they believe this well exists. And the truth is this, that well still produces water to this day. 2,000 years later, Jesus is having a conversation after this well was produced and it was still producing water. And 2,000 years after Jesus showed up, this exact same well is still producing water today. And here's Jesus saying, man, I got something better than you could ever possibly ask or imagine. You see, he's having this conversation, and she's trying to go around the side and figure some things out. And then listen to what she says. She says this, then I'll never be thirsty again, and I won't have to come here to get water. Hear that phrase. I won't have to come here to get water. Do you hear what she's saying? I don't have to show up here knowing that the town's talking about me. I don't have to live in the misery that is my life where I can't even find a man who will call me his wife these days. I don't have to come and be the outcast that I've always been. If you could possibly eliminate all of this stuff, please come and eliminate it from me. Because I don't want to come here anymore. I get tired of every day showing up at this place, showing up at this location, and reminding myself of the failure that my life really is. And some of us in the room know exactly the pain and the sorrow and the hurt that's in this very statement because you have been there. Some of us online have recognized this because you have had someone before to you who you have said, I'm going to give them my heart. I'm going to pour myself into this person. And what did they do? They cut it off again and again and again. And you've even come to a place where you refuse to even say, I will not let anybody in anymore. Why? Because my life stinks. And this lady has finally reached a point in the course of the conversation where she's saying to Jesus, I want this so that I don't have to come back here anymore. In essence, here's what she's saying. I'm really ready to listen. Can I say to you, because I know that for many of you, you have friends who are far from God that you've been trying to reach, and you invite them along to come with you to church occasionally, and they show up, and you're so excited, and then you feel like, hey, I'm done, I'm finished, and then you just kind of walk away from the situation. But the truth is that oftentimes there's a number of conversations that begin, and those conversations continue to move down the road, and it's not just a shallow, will you come to church with me conversation. It's a conversation that begins to pour into their life to get to a place to where you can go through and say, okay, now I'm ready to listen. And this lady is ready to find out who this guy is because she wants a better story in her life. And some of you in the room know exactly what I'm talking about. Some of you online know what I'm talking about. Why? Because you want the exact same thing in your life. So let me just go through some things that Jesus walked through briefly as we close out here today, understanding these steps that happen. The first step is this. Acknowledge the elephant in the room with grace. Acknowledge the elephant in the room with grace. You see, most of us like to hang around the outside of the sin conversation, don't we? We don't ever want to talk about it. I mean, you watch your people, your friend, or even your non-friend throw their life away, and you just sit there and you love them and try to encourage them, say, oh, I'm here, anything I can do for you? But you never want to acknowledge the pain with grace and mercy like Jesus did. Notice John chapter 4, verse 18 and 20 through 22. It says this. It says, you're right, Jesus says. You don't have a husband. You've had five husbands, and you're not even married to the man you're living with now. But notice the conversation of how Jesus does this. He brings the elephant in the room. He mentions the elephant in the room, and he brings it right before us. But even as he does that, he is trying to give her the grace and the mercy. He's not there condemning. He's not there saying, and you know what? Your lifestyle sending you straight to hell. I shouldn't talk to you because of who you are and the things that you've done. Jesus never once mentions that. He just says, you certainly spoke the truth. And then he continues on. She asked this question because this goes into the next step. Why is it that you Jews insist that Jerusalem's the only place of worship, while we Samaritans claim it's here at Mount Gerizim where our ancestors worshiped? Again, this is the, you have your place, we have ours. You went your direction a long time ago, we went our direction a long time ago. And you claim that Jerusalem is the holy city of God, we claim this is the holy mountain of God. We've seen God move on this mountain, you've seen God move in Jerusalem. And you tell us that you're better than us? Why is it that this happens? And Jesus says, believe me, dear woman, the time is coming when it will no longer matter whether you worship the Father on this mountain or in Jerusalem. But beginning to talk about himself, he says, you Samaritans know very little about the one you worship. Now understand, he's not trying to offend her. He's just saying, you have neglected the Old Testament. You decided that after the first five books of the Old Testament, you didn't need Psalms, you didn't need Proverbs, you didn't need the prophets, you didn't need the stories of the kings and the chronicles. You didn't need that stuff. All you needed was the first five books. And truthfully, there's a lot of good stuff in there, but you're missing some of this. And he's saying this out of grace. He's saying, you know very little about the one you worship, while we Jews know all about him, for salvation comes through the Jews. You see, this understanding really came out to being during the time of David, where that this idea of David being the king and the lineage of David would continue on for all of eternity. And the problem is, these folks that were part of the Samaritans didn't quite understand this. And Jesus is trying to describe this, and this is where we get into the next point, because the next point is step two, and the step two, it's simply this. You've got to show your friend the difference between religion and Christianity. You know, they asked a group of unchurched people why they don't go to church, and they gave this list of the reasons that they don't go. And the number one reason on that list was because unchurched people believe that churches are all about a list of do's and don'ts. And I would venture to say that a lot of you feel that way. That a lot of you are kind of on this list and you've got this moral high ground and you know the things that you're for and you know the things that you're against. And so you stand with those kinds of things. You say, you know what, this is it. We believe in this, and because we believe in this, this is the case. Now, some of you in the room, because I mentioned the fact that I'm pro-life, have a problem with that, because you're saying, well, I know people who've gone through an abortion and the difficulty of that. You know what? I've walked with those folks and I love them in the same way that Christ loves them, and have walked through the pain and the sorrow and the hurt year after year after year. And the thing about it is, God calls me to love them in the same way I love people who are pro-life. You're called to do the same. Love your enemies. You see, here's the thing. Religion, the word is do. This is what happens when people are about religion. You do this, and you do this, and you do this, and you're in. You miss this, you miss this, you're out. But the difference between the word religion and Christianity is this, because Christianity, the word is done. Jesus paid the price, ladies and gentlemen. You need to know that. Your sins have been covered, not because of the things you've done, but because of the very fact that Jesus Christ died on a cross for you. It is finished. And the best news for you in explaining this to folks all around you is the understanding of showing them that religion is a list of do's and don'ts, but Christianity is all based upon a person in the name of Jesus Christ who died on a cross as a sinless individual, and he rose from the dead, and he died for every single sin on this planet, including your sins and mine. And that is a clarifying point that so many unchurched people need to know. Jesus doesn't just stop there. He continues on in this conversation. And I want you to understand this, because first off, for us to see this idea, let's go back to the last screen, because I want you to understand this. Most of us hear this term called agnostic. You hear people say, I'm an agnostic, meaning, I don't know. I think there's a God out there, but I don't really understand what this is. Agnostics actually comes from the original word agnosis, which is a Greek word. And then the word agnosis, it simply means this: without knowledge. You see, I believe that more and more people are not Christians because they don't understand what Jesus Christ did for them. I believe that they're not Christians because they see church and religion as some big idea of do's and don'ts, instead of seeing Christianity as a fact that Jesus Christ already did it. It's done. And so this do versus don't becomes a difficult thing for us. And Jesus continues on in the conversation in John 4. But the time is coming, indeed it's here now, when true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. The third step is this: you introduce your friend to real worship. Introduce them to real worship. Here's what I'm talking about, because I think for a lot of us, we've lost this idea, but Jesus says real worship is spirit and truth. These are the things that he puts together. This is what real worship is. It's spirit and truth. And there are two big questions that every person needs to ask. And the question is, what is in the heart? You need to know. If your mind is wondering right now, what's in your heart? You know this. You know if you're focused on what we're saying. You know if you're in a moment where you're saying this is it, or if you're thinking to yourself, I'd rather do this or that, or your mind's wandering to some sin pattern that you have in your life. You know where your heart is, and this is why Jesus would address it with this lady, because this lady was honest enough to be honest with him to say, yes, you figured it out. You're a prophet. You know my sin pattern. You know my mistakes. You talk to me. I'm a woman and you talk to me. I'm not even of your race and you still talk to me. And the question for you to ask, and this is a personal question, where is your heart? So many times we gather to worship and we're heartless. And you just stand there as we sing anthems of the resurrection of Christ, as we sing the fact of how much he loves us and how much he died on a cross. And so many times you and I just stare off into space and wonder, when's this going to end? You see, there's something attractional about people who genuinely worship. And that's why I would ask this question, where's the heart? And the next question follows in line, is it from God? I mean, you know what you're thinking right now. Maybe you're thinking, man, that guy's saying a lot of stuff and he's so full of crap, I don't even know. Is it from God? Where's your heart? And is it from God? Because when people see genuine worship, there's something that's absolutely attractive about that. That's why Jesus would mention that and bring that to us. The next couple of verses, it says this. The woman says, I know the Messiah is coming, the one who's called the Christ. When he comes, he'll explain everything to us. And then she says, he says to her this incredible phrase, I am the Messiah. And what an incredible moment. And this is where the next step comes in, that we allow Jesus to reveal himself. You know, we're too busy oftentimes trying to convince people who Jesus is. And the truth is, he can convince himself. Jesus can reveal himself. This is part of the mystery, that when people show up and they see this incredible worship environment and they see this incredible thing happen and they're answering questions that other people seem to be frustrated about and they're just talking about it and they're figuring things out, and then boom, all of a sudden, here's Jesus and he's there and they're like, wow, that's who I want. And I love that. I love watching people who see this. The next step, continuing on in the next few verses. The woman left her water jar beside the well, ran back to the village telling everyone, come and see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could he possibly be the Messiah? So the people came streaming from the village to see him. Many Samaritans from the village believed in Jesus because the woman had said, he told me everything I ever did. The next step is very simply, go and tell. Go and tell. Tell people. Once you've had this exciting thing happen, then you tell people what Jesus did for you. And then to close out this idea, it says this, then they came out to see him. They begged him to stay in their village. Jesus stayed 2 more days, long enough for many more to hear his message and believe. And then listen to what these folks say. They said to the woman, we believe not just because of what you told us, but because we've heard him ourselves. We know he is indeed the Savior of the world. Ladies and gentlemen, it gives you an opportunity for other people to find this very Christ that you believe in. It gives you the opportunity when you invite someone to come and they see your worship and they recognize that you're genuinely trying to follow after this guy, and you begin to answer a question or two along the way and they begin to discover it and they begin to see what's happening. Then in the course of all of this happening, what we discover is that they go back and they bring somebody with them. They go back to step one and they walk through the process with them. Here's the challenge for you. Who in your world needs to hear this message of grace? Because I would venture to say that you have somebody in your world that you could mention off the top of your head. Or maybe for you, it's not somebody in your world. Maybe it's for you, somebody that you purposely have been avoiding. They're the person that gets that you give money to whenever you go to the gas station. And because they look like they're from a different race or religion, you give them less information than you would give to anyone else in your world. Maybe for you, it's a person that you make sure because you have some kind of a belief system that because they look different than you, you don't talk to them. Or maybe it's because you say, well, I'm just trying to be kind and they're this and I'm this, so I don't want to talk to them. Or maybe for you, it's because of their sin patterns and you know what they are because they've been public and somewhere along the way, they found out something happened in their world and because of that frustration, because of those things, the last thing you want to be known as a person who's hanging out with, you fill in the blank. Jesus dropped all of that. And my challenge to us is that maybe this week we could open our eyes and see people that we normally do not see. To see people who normally don't fit our world. To look at people who don't normally look our way or we look their way. My son is a student at a local school here called F.D. Reese Academy. It's a predominantly black school, and he is the only white student in the entire school. And for myself, it's been an incredible challenge because I believe in this understanding to love those that oftentimes I may not call them my enemies, I just don't have any association with people who don't look like me. And God has been moving in me some incredible things as I've watched my son drop barriers that I held as a kid, as I've watched my son bring life together and the students bring life to him. Every week when I drop my son off, every morning, I take him into the school and there's already 8 or 9 kids that just can't wait to get a hug from Pastor Chris. And I love the fact that my son is learning in his life to not have the same individuals that he would bring up as an enemy, but that he would call them friends just as Jesus called them friends. And I would challenge you. I'd challenge you to do the same. That wherever you may see yourself this week, whether it's at Walmart or Target, whether it's at a grocery store or a restaurant, that you wouldn't see someone with a bunch of tattoos and think, ah, they've got a lifestyle that I don't agree with. Or you wouldn't see someone who's a different color of skin or wearing a turban on their head and automatically choose, I'm not going to talk to them because I believe in this and they believe in this. But that you would be willing to do the very thing that Jesus did to the woman that he saw by the well and invite them in to a better story. And I promise you, it'll make your world a better story.